Detroit is one of the cities hit hard by the housing crunch, and now it's also in a full-blown political crisis. Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy says she expects Detroit Mayor Kilpatrick to turn himself in by 7 a.m. tomorrow on a slew of charges, including obstruction of justice. In the meantime, I'm going to let our Bloggers Roundtable have at him. I'm joined by Eric Brown, blogger for the Detroit News' political and government blog, also the media assassin Harry Allen, who blogs at harryallen.info, and Issa Yulin, the creator of IssaYulin.com. Hi, guys.
Hi, Fred.
How are you doing?
Hi.
So, you know, it just keeps rolling on in Detroit. Earlier in the show, we spoke with Jerome Vaughn at WDET. The mayor just keeps getting deeper and deeper into this. He and his former chief of staff, his alleged mistress, Christine Beatty, have been hit with felony charges, both of them. The charges include perjury and obstruction of justice, and the mayor responded to those charges earlier today.
I look forward to complete exoneration once all the facts surrounding this matter have been brought forth. In the meantime, I will remain focused on moving this city forward with the key initiatives that we've laid out before you.
Eric, you have been keeping a close eye on this. How do you think the mayor's performance was? You know, he came in with his lawyer, let his lawyer talk first, stood there somberly, and then took the mic briefly. Do you think that he transmitted a sense of confidence to the people?
No, I do not. As a matter of fact, this is a situation that has gone on far too long. I think he's at a point right now that he cannot effectively run the city of Detroit. His credibility definitely is shot, and I think it would be in his best interest to do the Elliot Spitzer and walk away.
Issa, what do you think? Do you think that this is going to cause some harm to the city?
I think it already has. If the allegations are true that the city taxpayers in Detroit have ponied up millions of dollars to cover up his, you know, love affairs, then the city has already suffered. He was so disingenuous at his press conference today as he spoke high and mightily about the judicial system and, you know, just seemed to be turning away from or trying to outmaneuver these very serious allegations.
Harry, you are the media assassin, so why don't you slice and dice the media coverage? What has been good about the way this is being covered? What's been bad?
Well, I'm sorry, I'm a bit stunned. I hadn't heard the audio. Is that new audio?
Yep, brand new.
Yes, today.
Because every time this guy talks, he says exactly the same thing.
Correct.
It's like you could just take that same piece of audio and plug it in every time he stands before the mic on any of these charges. It's amazing.
So your critique is he has nothing new to say.
Unless he wants to, you know, do a stand-up kind of recital of all those 40,000 messages that they, pages of testimony they went through or records they went through. Unless he wants to stand up and, like, do a New Yorican kind of, like, recital of those things. He has nothing to say.
I have a feeling someone else is going to pick up on that, if not him himself. Anyway, I want to move on to another speech. This speech got a much better reception. Senator Barack Obama's speech last week on race, he gave that speech in Philadelphia, and people are still talking about it.
Now, in the white community, the path to a more perfect union means acknowledging that what ails the African-American community does not just exist in the minds of black people, that the legacy of discrimination and current incidents of discrimination, while less overt than in the past, that these things are real and must be addressed, not just with words, but with deeds.
Issa, we've seen a lot of words following Senator Obama's speech, praise of him, people saying that the speech was not enough, people saying that afterwards he painted white people into a box by saying that his grandmother was a typical white person. Just this has had a huge amount of reverb. So what was it about the speech that really struck a chord?
I think it was one of the most important speeches and one of the greatest speeches in American history. And I don't think that many of the ordinary Americans that I've talked to, students, colleagues, friends, neighbors, who came out sort of less impressed with Obama's speech, actually heard the entire thing. Instead, they've been listening to pundits and prognosticators on places like Fox News. And I think what's unfortunate is that this really shining moment in terms of a path toward reconciliation along racial lines in this country is still being sullied by the politicization of the moment. And so that the people who have always been against Obama have just exploited this in a really unseemly way to advance their cause.
But don't you think that's just the nature of the game? It's a dirty game in some ways.
I think America is tired of that game, and I think we're ready to get back down to brass tacks and to honesty and leadership. I think that's what ordinary Americans want. I'm from rural Pennsylvania around Harrisburg, where, you know, the local folks seem to be leaning more toward Clinton. And I just think that people are ready to move forward, and that Obama is offering the opportunity for all of us to move forward. But there are just some old farts who still get microphones shoved in their faces who, for their own personal gain, are trying to hold us back.
Harry, you know, Obama was prompted to give that speech in part because of Jeremiah Wright, who was Obama's pastor, made many statements about America that some people found offensive, other people thought were just in line with the black church tradition of critiquing American politics. There's still some reverb over this. The rapper Common, in an unrelated interview, just came out and defended Wright, and there are other people who are still attacking Wright. Is the Wright issue buried at this point or not?
I don't think so. I think it's going to have a halo effect. I think that someone said that having given this speech, Barack Obama now has, if you will, feet of clay. Like, he's a normal man now. It's like before, he was a person kind of cresting or riding this incredible wave above all this. But now that he's stooped, if you will, in a way, to talk about this issue and remind people that he's just like them in a certain way. He's just like others. You know, he says he can no more distance himself from Pastor Wright than he can the black community, which is like, which might be the statement that just jumped out for, you know, I think, for many white voters.
Eric, I actually want to go on to a related issue. You've got Jeremiah Wright, and now another Christian leader, Mike Huckabee, stepped up. He's a conservative Baptist minister, former White House candidate. He came on MSNBC's show Morning Joe and said that he could understand some of the vitriol lacing Wright's sermons.
I think that you have to cut some slack, and I'm going to be probably the only conservative in America who's going to say something like this, but I'm just telling you, we've got to cut some slack to people who grew up being told you have to sit in the balcony when you go to the movie, you have to go to the back door to go into the, right. the restaurant, and you can't sit out there with everyone else. There's a separate waiting room in the doctor's office. Here's where you sit on the bus. And you know what? Sometimes people do have a chip on their shoulder and resentment, and you have to just say, I probably would too.
Now, were you surprised by that, Eric? And do you think that there will be some people who come out and say, well, yeah, you know, maybe Wright does have a chip on his shoulder, and even though I'm not from the same background, I can understand that?
I'm not surprised by the comments by Huckabee. And just to agree with what Issa said, this is not about politics. What was said by Senator Obama last week is something that needs to be said, and people need to understand it. I think a lot of people are going to YouTube to check out the speech again so they can get a better understanding of what it is to be black in America. That's where this all boils down to. Not many people that are not black have ever walked an inch of my shoes. So they do not understand what it is to be looked upon as less than a total human being. And Barack is trying to bring it home to people. Mike Huckabee gets it a little bit, but I'm not so sure I agree with, you know, the comments made with regards to the fact he made statements, but he lives in a state where they still fly the Confederate flag. That's neither here nor there. The fact that he was willing to say that he understood where Senator Obama was coming from, that's a march in the right direction, and that's a march that many people need to follow suit as it relates to this whole issue.
Well, you know, so much of this stuff about race is so serious and so macro. But now there's also a website called Stuff White People Like, and it calls itself a scientific approach to highlight and explain stuff white people like. There have been 90 postings. Barack Obama was number 8. Asian girls and having black friends also made the top 20. Harry, you blogged about this site, and at a time when we're being so having such a serious and in-depth exploration of race, what does a site like this do or not do for the dialogue on race?
Well, surprisingly, the statement that I found most pointed about this site came from a blogger on the New Republic website, Adam Sternberg, who wrote a piece called Why White People Like Stuff White People Like. And he ended it by saying, Because if there's one thing white people really like, it's pretending to poke fun at themselves while actually being allowed to feel superior. I think that kind of gets right to the heart of this website. I kind of feel it's like really a good joke, and it's not dangerous at all. It's not as dangerous, certainly, as the fact of what white people like means, of what white people like means for black people.
Well, Gary Dauphin, who's an L.A.-based writer, also did an article for The Root on this.
An excellent piece, yes.
Yeah, he says because the person who put together the website just got a $350,000 book deal, apparently. I cannot confirm that, but that is being published in reports. And he also sort of basically said a similar thing to you. Issa, do you also think that this is a case where it's easier to be snarky and fun about race than it is to dig deep? And does this have, I mean, is there anything wrong with that? Not everything has to be deep.
You know, it's funny that we're bringing this up at the tail end of our conversation about Obama, because one of the shining moments in his speech for me was actually when he talked about white anxieties. And he talked about immigrant whites. I think you could use that to apply to working class whites as well, who have anxieties. And it, not only was he articulating the experiences of African Americans, but extending the hand of fellowship, if you will, to white Americans. This site doesn't do that sort of thing. It's not the most dangerous thing in the world to me. It's more like maybe an annoyance. Sometimes it's actually funny, you know. But it doesn't get to the heart of the real divisions in American society.
I think that
it doesn't serve a whole lot of purpose for me.
I think that's a really good point. But I think that, you know, it's funny. I think that the part that was most disappointing to me about Obama's speech was that part where he talked about the anxieties of white people. Mm. And because when he talked about the reasons for them, they were all reasons that were being executed by other white people. He talked about the anxieties of black people, and the reasons for those anxieties are things that mostly white people do. But the reasons for the anxieties of white people are, you know, jobs disappearing, lobbyists. That's white people. That's more white people.
Well, you know what? On that note, this is just with that part where I'm like, oh, I wish it could go on forever, but it can't.
Right.
So
I know. We got to wrap it up. Eric, Harry, Issa, thanks so much.
Thank you, Farai.
Eric Brown blogs for the Detroit News' political and government blog. Harry Allen blogs at harryallen.info. He joined me from our NPR studios in New York. And Issa Yulin is the creator of issayulin.com.